Welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a weekly podcast on navigating life without booze.
So, Kaylee, how many days have you been alcohol free and how are you feeling?
Great question. I am 535 days dry, which has been really cool. I love that number. And I'm really excited to be able to say that I've not had alcohol for a year and a half. And that's coming up. And I had my first acupuncture appointment today. So I'm just feeling like very, very blissed out. I've been kind of living it up in terms of just how cozy I've been and just been really trying to do things that feel good. So yeah, I'm kind of zenned out over here, to be honest. But it has been a series of social situations that just now calmed down. So I'm kind of like really leaning into the other side of it. But I was just doing a lot of social stuff this past weekend. So I'm glad that that's behind me. How about you?
There's a theme. Yeah. I've been alcohol free for almost 450 days, which feels like a big number for me. You know, it just feels like that's like an OG number.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds so legit.
Yeah. I'm excited about that. I actually think I'm going to have like a little photo taken and share it on my Instagram. So check that out for anyone listening. I'm not sure when I'm going to do it, but going to do that. And then I'm really excited because I'm officially on vacation.
Yes. I feel like it's been forever since you all have taken a vacation or done something too. So,
yeah. So the last time I took time off work was when we went to Palm Springs. So that was the last time I had a day off. And we don't get bank holidays and things like that, you know?
So, yeah, I know. It's so tough.
But it's totally fine. My job has actually been really great lately. I have put up some boundaries and kind of just introduced some new processes into my workday that make it shorter, which has been awesome. I've only been working 5 hours a day, going in around like 9 and then leaving around 2:30 or 3. So yeah, that feels good. But we're heading out of town for the next 4 days and we're going to kayak and read, and we're staying at this boutique hotel and I'm fucking stoked about it. And I am really excited to just eat out and chill out with my fam.
That sounds so awesome and relaxing. It was rainy all day today, but then the sun came out and I just was daydreaming about like hammock reading and the summer. I'm so, so excited for it. I really hope we have a good season. So
I know. Well, it was actually in Eugene. It was 74 today and blue skies.
Okay, that's kind of terrifying.
It was actually, and I took all my plants outside and I watered them after I took a nap. And literally, okay, Lee, I was supposed to get fasted blood work done this morning. So I stopped eating last night at 8 p.m. and my appointment was at noon today. And I fucking got there after having no coffee, no food for like 14 hours. Got there, wrong day.
What the fuck?
Wrong day. So I immediately drove over to the coffee stand, got myself I drink a quad shot with white chocolate over ice with a little bit of soy milk for cream. I got that and a bag of Carl's Jr. And I went home and I ate it in bed and then I slept for an hour and a half and it was fucking depressing and great.
I hate when that happens because then you have to do it over again. And I literally feel like I have no blood when I have to fast for that type of stuff. Like if I don't
eat, you're just not going to be able to give blood. Yeah. There won't be any.
Yeah. Like there is no blood to give.
It dries up from your fasting, your fasted state.
Oh my God.
So anyways, so yeah, and then one last thing that I hope everyone's proud of me for doing. I feel like I'm in a tell all right now. I got my social media shifts all covered for the week. So I am taking a true no working vacation. And I didn't do that while I was in Palm Springs. I didn't do that in Laguna. I haven't done that on any vacation in over a year. So I'm excited about that.
Yay. I bet you're going to come back like just super blissed out and your headaches are going to hopefully get better and, you know.
Yeah, for sure, man. So, Kaylee, what are we talking about this week? What do we have for our listeners? Last week was Therapy Jeff, and I just don't know if we're ever going to be able to fucking top that.
I know. Seriously, I wish he could just be with us for every episode, because, yeah, how do you follow? Like, such a fucking banger.
I know. He's the best.
But what we wanted to talk about today was based off of Katie and I both having a really social weekend last weekend. I went to go see Trixie and Katya live. I went down to Eugene. I saw my grandparents and then drove back up and did some like social media stuff myself. And Katie also had a busy weekend and had dinner with her folks. And we were both like, I feel hungover, but not from alcohol, like just from anxiety and like being in social situations. Yeah.
I almost feel like I get a little bit of like, I don't know if this is right, as a lot of what I say on the pod, adrenal fatigue. Like, I feel depleted with weekends like that. But I also found that I did find some like real joy in some of it as well. So I just am trying to hold on to that. And I just think that that kind of brought up anxiety in sobriety.
Yeah, 100%. It's one of those topics that I feel like we've touched on every single episode, but we haven't really done a deep dive on it.
I feel like you said, we touch on it everywhere, but we've never done like a full episode on anxiety. And I just think it's such a tricky subject because each of our experiences with mental health and anxiety and just who we are in society and how we interact every day is so different from one another. So one size just doesn't fit all with anxiety and mental health. And so I just would never want to speak to something that isn't accurate for everyone else. But we are going to do our best today to talk about our own experiences with anxiety in early sobriety.
Yeah, 100%. I hate that I said that. I really need to stop being like 100%, 100%.
That number is big. What a big number. I do that every time, dude. An idiot.
I always go, yeah.
I have this like really like bad tendency to like the stoner talk. I'm like, stoner yeah. talk, like yeah. I just took a bong rip. Anyways, so we have a fact for all of our listeners today. Did you know that 8 million Americans have co-occurring addiction and mental health disorders, i.e. I shouldn't say i.e.
What is that even fucking short for, though? An example? Like,
yeah. 8 million Americans have co-occurring addiction and mental health disorders. For example, alcohol and anxiety. And so we just thought it would be an interesting topic to touch on today. So bear with us.
Yeah, I feel like we all kind of have a different starting place when it comes with anxiety. Like, Katie, I'm just curious, like, how did that look for you early on?
So, okay, there's just so much. I have always been an extremely performance-based people pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
I've always taken really great pride in doing things perfectly and completing what I was supposed to. And then always wanting affirmation after that, right? Like, I was like a dog with a treat when I was a kid with all adults.
Yeah.
But I experienced some trouble. We moved around a lot when I was little, and I went to this daycare center where there was a We Hate Katie club.
What the hell? I had a We Hate Kaylee club in high school. That's crazy.
For me, my experience was I was probably 7 years old when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having a hard time adjusting to the new place that we had moved to and just moved around young. And I was, you know, starting to like steal things off backpacks in the hallways as an elementary student and stealing money from my mom and dad and just exhibiting some behaviors that were a little bit concerning. And then we added in this mixture of these new kids. And so I went to therapy for the first time when I was 8.
Wow. I didn't know that, Katie.
Yeah. And it was a great experience. I remember there were these like sticker rocks on the floor. And I remember when we would complete a task that I responded in a higher self-worth way, I got to skip to the next one, you know? So I think it was what would be considered cognitive behavioral therapy. I don't know, actually. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds like that. Like,
yeah, I don't know enough exactly to talk on the subject like I am Therapy Jeff, but he would be able to tell us.
We wish.
I feel like I need him commentating right over here. So, yeah. So anyways, I think that that was the start of me feeling like I don't fit in. Like, I'm different from everyone else, but I still really badly wanted to get attention from adults. And so, yeah, I just remember that kind of started a lot of those like perfectionism, people pleasing, and anxious attachment style behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I started breaking the rules, I was legit scared of the consequences and of my mom. And so I snuck around a lot and lied a lot. And I started to recognize from a pretty early age that that's when I also started drinking alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting because about the time where I was really starting to get a sense of who I was already drinking alcohol. So I think I skipped over consciously being able to identify my anxiety because I had already started drinking at that point. Oh, and because I was a people pleaser, whether I was an introvert or an extrovert, I was getting the most attention and feedback as an extrovert. So I really, at an early age, also was a social butterfly. Not because it energized me, probably because it gave me more affirmation.
Right. And I think that even the whole introvert-extrovert question, I feel like there's so much more. I'm just learning that everything is never as black and white as I, you know, originally thought it to be. And I think with that, too, there's always a little bit of both because I felt like I was really social with my friends. Like, I was always out of the house doing things with the kids in the neighborhood when I was younger. But then when my dad married my then stepmom, they would do these big camping trips where we would like rent out all of Lake Shasta and we would have like multiple families together. And I was really criticized and punished for just like doing my own
existing
thing and vibing and doing what I wanted to do, because I was the kid who like wanted to like be in the hammock reading Harry Potter, running through the forest by myself, like looking for fucking lizards. And, you know, at the time, I'm pretty sure I still very much thought fairies were real. So I was like, cool, I'm going to go by this little creek. I'm going to look for some salamanders. I'm going to like do my thing. But everyone else was drinking, even the kids that were underage. And so it was basically like, if you don't binge drink and go inner tubing and go to the dock and jump in the water with the other kids, then you are, I was a stuck up brat that like I had my nose in the air and I came from a privileged, you know.
And you're too good for everybody else.
And I'm too good for everybody else. And so it was always like, why can't you be more like my best friend's daughter? Like, why can't you just go socialize? And so was really like forced into a lot of those situations, which created a lot of anxiety. And fun fact, that daughter that she wanted me to be like, when I did hang out with her, which was exactly what my parents wanted, I ended up doing coke, getting on the back of a guy's motorcycle, going over 100 miles per hour on the California freeway, and then sleeping in some older guy's house on like his kid's bed.
Dude, I do not miss those days.
Yeah, it was fucking weird and gross. And I just felt unsafe the whole time. And so it's just funny that like that social anxiety was prompted as a result of kind of almost rejecting the binge drinking that then I just started doing on my own anyway, probably with those same pressures to like be liked and all of that stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I always was trying to keep up with like the bad boys. That's why I wound up drinking, you know, but
hell yeah.
I was like always trying so hard around them. I wanted to be cool, like lying about the music I listened to, you know, just doing fucking idiot shit, which is fine. I love that version of myself. It is part of who I am now. We are integrating one step at a time, but alcohol made all of the worry go away and gave me that false level of confidence in the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting because for me, one of the reasons that drove me to drink was going into these social situations, being insecure about myself, being insecure about how I would be perceived. So I would binge drink. But then when I was drunk, when I got that, it was like four drinks in me and went into like some bar bathroom with like horrible fucking lighting and my eyes are bloodshot and probably half open because I'm wasted. And I would look at myself and be so fucking mean to myself. I'd be like, you literally look like a lake woman, like that you would just like come from the sewers.
Wait. Lake woman. A woman of the lake? Like a woman that lives in the lake?
I think so. Yeah.
I'm just trying to paint the proper picture here for our listeners.
Like someone, yeah, who was like dragged from a lake, like Samora, like coming from the well, like a wet. I don't know why.
Oh,
I wasn't
shit.
Like sweaty, like
a wet bitch.
Yeah, just like a gross wet bitch. And I always thought that like my fingers looked really old, like that I had like really wrinkly fingers. And I would just totally freak myself out and be like,
pick yourself apart,
give myself that anxiety even while I'm still under the influence of alcohol, and then be like, I gotta fucking get out of here, like I cannot be perceived, and then go home and be hungover and then have anxiety.
Just a cycle when you were drinking.
Yeah, it was never a positive part of helping me through any of those moments. So
well, and like alcohol is the band-aid for the anxiety that like it becomes,
yeah,
it became a bigger monster as I got older. Let's get into that after we hear from our partners.
Sounds good. If you know me, you know I'm always drinking 5 NA beverages at one freaking time. So I love having different concoctions to switch things up. That's why Dry Hard Pod partnered with High Street Tonics, a woman-owned, locally crafted range of organic herbal bitters and honey cider vinegar tonics. The restorative tonics support digestion and well-being through their herbal properties, and they make the most amazing mocktails. Use the link in our bio to shop their website and use code DRYHARDPOD for 10% off when you purchase.
As you all know, I'm obsessed with Reframe app. It's the number one alcohol reduction app. It's built to help you drink less. Whether your goal is to cut back or quit entirely, Reframe is life-changing. Daily Zoom support groups, a community forum, and challenges, podcasts, TED Talks, you name it, over 100 resources are accessible in this app at any given time. You can download Reframe app on iOS, use the 7-day free trial, and use code KATY, Katie, for 10% off your subscription.
I'm not gonna lie, this lighting situation,
so good. Perf. Okay. I also really want to talk about like the early sobriety days, because I think people can feel like even if they've never experienced anxiety, that all of a sudden this is coming up for them and they're like, fuck, like why did I quit drinking? I feel so much worse now, you know?
Yeah, sobriety and anxiety go together like peanut butter and fucking jelly in my situation.
Yeah.
Which I always sleep on PB&Js and I wish I didn't, because
they're so good. Every time I have one, I'm so pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I love a grilled peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
Oh, like
yeah.
On sourdough. Mm. Okay. But, you know, it's funny because obviously not until I was older that I noticed that my anxiety was getting progressively worse and worse, which was a huge motivator for me to stop drinking. Like, I didn't realize until I was like 29, 30 is when I really started getting it, even though I was drinking, which is interesting. So then when I quit, I was like, this feels so good. And then I was like, oh my God, why do I hate myself? Why does everyone else hate me? Why am I getting these like intrusive thoughts? And why can't I control my breathing and my heart rate? And yeah. Like, I was just getting all of these symptoms when I first stopped drinking. And, you know, you get your pink cloud even, and you feel good through that. But then on the other side of it, the anxiety, anxiousness of so many different types, just kind of tidal wave over you in that time. I went to, yeah, this is actually like probably 7 days into my sober journey, as one calls it, I went to my employer. I do the social media for a salon in town, the salon that we love, The Collective Beauty and Wellness, shout out. But I manage the social media, so I went to their team meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were there, it was so great. It was almost like a little Christmas get together, whatever. Like, we had like a charcuterie board, and then we like sat by the fire, and I wasn't drinking. And I remember sitting by the fire, and everyone else was drinking more. And, you know, no one was tanked or anything, but they all started getting buzzed, and the conversation got a little bit more open and a little bit more free. And I all of a sudden was so itchy.
Yeah.
Like so itchy. And I felt hot, like from my toes to the brim of my hairline. And the only thing I can really describe this as, or what I have experienced before in my life, was like anytime I spoke in public or on a stage or I performed, I would feel the same way. So I went to the bathroom and I took a picture. I have so many pictures on my phone of my anxiety rashes now in sobriety, because I do like to stop, identify, and document, and then move on to kind of identify it. It helps me. It's part of actually a big tip that I would give to people experiencing anxiety is like stop, feel the feeling, deep breaths, what's true, what's fact, and what's not, and then remove what's not and just focus on the fact and just keep breathing, regulate your heart rate, feel the feet, you know, your feet on the ground, tell yourself you're safe, you're loved, and then move on. Like you can get through it. But it took me so much time practicing that, you know, and I was in the bathroom. This is like the first time I had experienced this in early sobriety. And I'm like, didn't have those tools yet to be able to do that. And so I just went back out into the circle and was like, oh my gosh, I have this weird rash, you know, and then it's even more weird. And I used to chalk it up to being allergic to alcohol, because I would get this rash when I would drink wine and my eyes would turn red. Like I would get bloodshot eyes and like rosy cheeks.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, I'm just allergic to alcohol. It was like, no, you're actually like super fucking anxious.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I haven't had mine manifest as much in that way, with like the itchy feeling and like the warmth and like the heat. But I feel like I experience like genuine fear, which is not something that I experience a lot. So it's a lot of like really racing heart, having to like actually physically take deep breaths. And I have to just be like, I'm okay. Just reassuring myself, because I panic. And I think that's something that is a little bit newer for me, is having, and I don't know exactly what a panic attack looks like or how that's defined. And I think that's what's,
as a professional. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the difficult things with mental health is, you know, I had struggled with depression since I was around 7 or 8, but anxiety was newer for me. So even being able to identify something as like, oh, this is anxiety, I am feeling anxious, this is a symptom of this thing that's going on, like for these reasons, getting to that point can take a while and like be a journey within itself too, because you think that you're going crazy, or at least that's how I feel. I would call Danny sometimes when this would happen and be like, hey, I don't know if I'm going crazy or if I'm just, you know, having an anxiety attack and this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. And yeah,
it's so good to be able to reach out to someone that you can talk to in those moments. That's not something that I've ever done, but it's so therapeutic even afterward to talk to someone that cares about me and has my best interest at heart, you know? So I really like that suggestion too, Kaylee. I think that's a good idea. Like,
yeah, just having also people validate your experience, like both depression and anxiety, I think can be really isolating, and you feel like you're either like, yeah, like you're going crazy and there's something wrong specifically with you and like all eyes are on you, or when you're depressed it's like you are the only, like you feel like you can't explain the way that you feel and like your behaviors. And so I think Jeff in his episode last week was talking about how awesome it is and how like it's a non-negotiable moving forward to like be with someone sober. And I think although my partner isn't sober, my partner has a really, really good understanding of depression and anxiety and is very nurturing to my specific mental health issues. And I think that that's been huge to be able to have someone talk me through something in the way that like actually helps. So not to like already get into things, but there's so many awesome ways that you can look at resources to be a support to your partner, not only just yourself. And then you know, you always give the best advice to people that aren't you, but some of it sticks when you're when you're saying it out loud that you can apply to yourself. So
And Jeff has a video actually on his Instagram and TikTok that says date someone that wants to know about your mental health. And I think that that's really important.
100%.
And like a lot of us too listening to this, like for those of you listening, I didn't, my now husband and I, we were not talking about our mental health when we got together. When I was 22 when Steve and I met, and Steve was 24. And so it just took a lot of us growing as individuals to get to a point where we were both open and asking and learning and growing and talking about that much later in our relationship. And so for anyone listening who's like, oh my gosh, my partner and I are not on that level at all. Are we doomed? Like, do I need to break up with them? It's like, no, wait, like if they're open and you guys can start the conversation, start having them now and frequent. And it's really scary to talk about your mental health, but it's so important in those close relationships, intimate relationships. So yeah, I think I've only ever had one panic attack. 'Cause like what I had, you know, at Chelsea's was not what I would consider a panic attack. I don't think I get those so often when I do things outside of my comfort zone. Like I get that rash every time I post a reel on Instagram.
Yeah, you do. And you get them all the time.
And also I think maybe I'm really sensitive to adrenaline because oftentimes anxiety and adrenaline feel the same for me. And I don't know if chemically they have anything to do with each other. But once I quit drinking, I remember being in the car and someone honking behind me. And it scared me to the point, like it didn't, it did more than just scare me. It also sent this like sharp spring up my entire body and into my head. And like my heart rate just like went 1,000 miles per hour. Obviously that's not true, but what the fuck ever. It elevated my heart rate. And I was like, and my whole body, like I felt it in my entire nervous system, and it took me a while to come down from it. And that happens now to me so much more frequently. And I'm thinking, holy shit, I was drinking alcohol and totally numbing how intuitive my body is to its surroundings and its response times to everything.
Yeah.
And I don't think I was just doing that while I was actively drinking. I think that when you are drinking at all, you don't get that full awareness back for it. It takes time.
No, that's why I jumped on the back of a motorcycle with a bunch of coked out dudes in their 30s when I was like 18.
Yeah. And so it's been really interesting getting to know my nervous system in sobriety. I thought it was never going to end. Probably like 2 months in, I was like, why do I feel like this? And even now, Kaylee, when we went to Palm Springs, I was on the airplane and we were probably 20 minutes from landing. And I just felt this pit in my stomach and just this awful feeling of dread. And like, I needed to get off the airplane as fast as I could, or I was going to vomit. And I've never felt like that in my entire life. And Kaylee knows I started stripping off my sweatshirt. I took off my jean jacket.
I could clearly see she was on a mission, but she like left some of her favorite clothes. And I was like, do you want to go back? And she was like, nope, I am on a fucking mission.
On the plane. I physically had to get off the plane as fast as I could. And it's so interesting because I've always been the kind of person that really claims a strong mental health as personality trait, which is like such a defense mechanism. But I've always taken a lot of pride in being able to, like we've talked about, go, go, go and do all the things and whatever. And that was like the first time where I was like,
you handle your shit. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was the first time I was like, I don't want to handle this anymore. Like, someone take it, you know, like I'm not here for this. Get me off this plane and away from these people. And I want to be at my house. I've just never felt that way before. And you guys, that was a year and 2 weeks into my, no, a year and a week into sobriety. Oh my gosh, there's just so much. It's crazy. All the tools that you learn to deal with it. It's just like, yeah, Kaylee, you add on to that because I could talk about that for an hour.
Well, I was just going to say it's a really good point because if you drink, you are numbing. So yes, you don't have to feel that bad feeling, but you never, ever develop those tools to how to fix it. Mm-mm. Because it is going to be different mm-hmm. for everyone. And you do have to like actually go through the work of doing it. And so I think when people stop and they are not able to numb that experience, like it can suck a little bit. And I've myself had conversations where I'm like, I just want to numb and I just want to be like everyone else who's drinking and I don't want to be the odd person out today and I don't want to feel different and I just want to be able to like not have this be so difficult for me and everyone who has to interact with me today. But it really like doesn't solve it. And I've also had some of my best conversations where I've gotten like closer to the people around me or ended up, you know, just advocating for myself in a way that I never have before and just continuing to like up level my own mental health as a result of having to go through those like tests and challenges. And now every time it's better because like you said, Katie, like sometimes you just have to be like, nope, my jacket does not matter to me right now. Like I need out of this airport. And it's like, okay, cool. Like, whatever. Let's go. And then like you bounce back really quickly from that though. Like you really like did what you needed to do and let's go.
Yeah. And by the time we got out into the fresh air and we were walking, I told Kaylee like, wow, what a crazy experience I just had. That was out of body, but it was cool because I feel like I learned that I could just be kind to myself and with no regard, fuck everyone else and mm-hmm. do what I needed, like you said, to feel better. I've never done that. I've always taken other people's feelings into consideration before improving the place that I was in for my own comfortability. I don't do that. I was taught that you grin and you bear it and you suffer at the expense of other people. Like, that's part of life. And I still believe parts to that, obviously not it as a whole. It's super problematic and unrealistic, but it felt really good to prioritize myself. And then I was like, oh, I can lead by example by doing this. It's not something I ever considered before.
Yeah, I had a scenario super recently, actually this past weekend when I was feeling hungover from it. I was reflecting just on why I felt that way and some of the things that I need to work on, but also just some of the tools that did actually work and end up making my time better. So I went to go see Trixie and Katya live, which is something I've been excited about, and bought tickets so far in advance that I forgot it was even happening. I bought these tickets like 8 months in advance. They're completely sold out in like every city, every state. Good for them. They're fucking so awesome. Cool. And
that's amazing.
I forgot that I used to see live theater pretty frequently and it's something that I'm really passionate about and I love it and I love a performance and I love getting dressed up and being inside of this like beautiful place that looks like a museum and like taking in an experience with other people. Very cool. But I was feeling so anxious about going, so much to the point where I was like, there is no way that the people that I am going to go with are not going to think that I'm acting weird. And thankfully, they are all people that I feel like I can be pretty close to. I know them pretty well. I'm like, cool, I can be honest with these people. And I ended up texting them before the show and just being like, hey, I'm feeling super anxious. And I am really like, my body dysmorphia shit is coming in full frontal today. Like, I've been having a month of really going through it with that sort of stuff. And so I just, you know, I'm wearing fake eyelashes and I don't know if they make me look fucking weird. And I just, I'm so excited to see you all and do this thing, but I'm just not feeling 100. And I just wanted to let you know, just in case I was acting weird or anything like that.
Aww, you're so sweet. And that's a good tool. So good job.
Yeah. And I guess maybe I should have been worried about freaking them out for being like, hey, I have these like mental health issues. But honestly, they're like, yeah, we get it. Like,
they're like us too.
Yeah, us too.
Different, but same, I feel like, is now the proper response.
Yeah, exactly. So I ended up showing up, and immediately what I would have done in the beginning is just beeline for the fucking bar and gotten like a drink or two drinks. I ended up going to the bathroom, like literally taking deep breaths, staying in the bathroom for a little bit just to like center myself. Went to go get a drink and I was like, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to like get all my shit together. Like I'm going to get everything that I need in order to like sit still and watch the show. And then I can just like be in my spot. I'm not moving. I'm not getting like just overstimulated with all of the people and all of the different conversations. I really like can get so easily distracted by that. And people were turning looks. Like that audience was gorgeous. So many cool people there. And I went and got a drink and got an orange juice. And they asked if I wanted ice. And these super, super young girls in front of me bought like a cider and a wine each and a water and like probably dropped like $50 at the concession.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was
yeah.
like, oh, that used to be me for sure. But even just looking at the orange juice with like the ice and like being in that environment, I was like, man, this would be so easy to just if I had a flask to pour a bunch of vodka in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself even craving that. And I was like, no, girl, like,
yeah, girl, you've got a year and a half under your belt.
Yeah, like we don't do that anymore. Like you're going to be OK. And I literally had to say to myself, like, it's all good. Like, it's all good. You're going to be OK. Like, you just find your seat, find your friends, sit down. Mm-hmm. And then you just have to sit and watch the show. And that's it. Like, you're good. And I ended up having such a good time. It was so good to see everyone. I left like having this energy of being like, that was so fun. And so it's nice to kind of push myself in order to get through those situations instead of just being the only friend who's then there blackout drunk or not going.
Yeah, yes. Not going was like huge in early sobriety for me. And I still advocate for that for anyone that is feeling shaky. However, like once you start to put those tools in place, like Kaylee's talking about, you get to apply them in social situations with your friends and it does get better and it does get easier. Kaylee, did I tell everyone, remind me about going to see Chelsea Handler? Did I tell the pod?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so I went and saw Chelsea Handler really last minute after I recorded with Zach Mathers, Braving the Journey. You guys go listen if you want to hear sober stories. He's great. Anyways, I was done with that and our tickets were bought like 45 minutes before I started recording. Like we just last minute, we're going to do it. Me and one of my really good friends, and they're really supportive of my sobriety mission. And they are actually, I mean, like not totally sober, but definitely alcohol is not a priority in their life, which is really cool to spend time with people like that.
Yeah.
And we also used to drink together at certain points too. So it's like, cool. It's like the best of all worlds, put into one friend. But I literally hopped in my car after we got done recording, like physically took my headphones off, scuttled out of my house into my car. And I just drove downtown 25 minutes before the show started. I was like, oh my gosh. First of all, I'm going to Chelsea Handler. There's going to be like 3,000 people there. It's a lot of people. The whole center is sold out.
Yeah, shit.
I was like, usually I would have been drinking wine on the way. Easily.
Yeah.
Easily had two glasses before I left. Potentially sipped one on the way. Depends if it was dark or not.
Yeah.
Because these eyes at night, you know.
Yeah.
So I pull in the parking garage. I'm just like so chill. I'm like, these people are all idiots. They're taking so long. They're all yelling at each other. It's just like a pain. I didn't even bat an eyelash about paying $10 to park in the parking garage. I was just like, whatever. I go in, I pull out my, you know, my stuff I need to get in. I get in and people are turned up for Chelsea. Yeah, they are drunk for Chelsea. And it's downtown within walking distance of everything. And
all the bars, everywhere. People probably started drinking like 2 hours before, parked in the parking garage, started drinking in Bermuda 2 hours before the show. And then, so they've already been drinking for like 3 hours.
Yeah, I used to do that. I used to do that shit before the Nutcracker.
Oh, yeah. That's how I know what they up to is because I was there at fucking Doc's Pad or whatever it was.
So we wait in line. I'm looking at the bar line and I'm like, holy shit. It was, I mean, it was going nowhere. And there were just people with cups, you know, plastic cups of wine, like balancing as many as they could. And, you know, the double IPAs, the big beers.
Yes, but wasn't it? Okay, so I don't know if you did this, but when I was at Trixie and Katya, there was that huge fucking line too, like really, really long. And I just got to like squeeze through and just be like, oh, excuse me, I'm just going over here, and like totally skipped it and walked up the stairs. And there was a way shorter line up there anyway.
Oh,
so
cool.
I got my orange juice quickly, but it was nice to not have to wait in that line.
I know, for sure. And so we go to our seats and everyone around us is drinking, which is fine. But I was just like, wow, like, you've made it. Look at you. And we were sitting in the nosebleeds. There weren't very many people around, which is the way to go when you're sober. For anyone listening, if you're thinking about going to a show or like any kind of theater, sit up and away from people. It is really nice to feel like you're kind of in control, you know? Like,
seriously,
if you're worried,
like, can you please
about the crowds,
put me in the put me in the rafters so I don't have to fucking grind dance with these teenagers.
Yes. Oh my gosh, we're gonna go see Coheed and Cambria in August.
Oh, I'm jealous. That's cool.
Yeah, it's gonna be really fun. We're going with Steve's brother and sister-in-law, and they're fun, and we're gonna stay at the Crystal Ballroom. And yeah, so anyways, we're doing that, but that's gonna be my first like live music in sobriety, which we're gonna have to do an episode on that too. Anyways, I'll bring it back around here. I'm just saying that when we were waiting in the bathroom after the show, after Chelsea, we laughed our asses off, whatever. I was really thirsty, though. I was kind of sad. I was like, I just need something to wet my whistle, but I didn't want to wait. I didn't want to miss anything or get up or, you know,
wait in that long-ass line just for water. They need to have separate water stations.
I agree. Or, like, I just didn't want to be a spectacle, like, do something fucking dumb while everyone's, like, captivated, you know? So I sit there, and we go to the bathroom because we both really have to pee afterward, and there's this long line, and we're getting so close, and all of a sudden, we see these two girls like push through and they get up close to us. And this woman who's had one too many that's in line is like, excuse me, you can't cut us. And the girl that's like rushing, she's like, I just got vomited on. So I'm going to cut you and make it to a sink so I can wash off my coat and my shoes. And I look down and she's covered in barf.
Fuck. Gross.
And I was just like, and it smelled like, it was just like, and my friend and I, we looked at each other and we were like, I'm so fucking glad that I'm not drunk right now, or that I didn't barf on someone, or that someone didn't barf on me. And like, I know that person wasn't sober that barfed on that girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Yeah. And it wasn't even her friend. Like, it was a stranger that puked on her.
Oh my God. That is.
And she wasn't drunk. Like, she was totally sober. She was like, great, but not great in the crisis.
Jack and I went to go see Wizard People Dear Reader live, which, if you don't know what that is, Brad Neely, who did Professor Brothers, like early YouTube cartoon, dubbed over the entire first movie, Harry Potter and.
Oh my God. Yes.
The Sorcerer's Stone. So it's. It's great. And the person who did the live reading wasn't Brad Neely, but sounded exactly like him, did it perfect. It was great. But we ended up leaving early because it started late. So it didn't even get started until like 10:30 on a weeknight. And then people were just ordering like pitchers and pitchers of beer. And this one guy like spilled his beer all over the floor, but then decided to sit on the floor. And so he like sat in his own spilled beer. And I was like, ah, this is, it's a Wednesday. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't really feel like it, it just seems like it's our time to go. So those situations, it to me, that still really, that makes me nervous or anxious or feel unsafe. Not like that person's gonna hurt me, but you just know that like the whole group that they were with were drinking, so one of them's getting in the car and driving. And I don't know, it just makes me feel like, especially for, I don't know how much I've talked about this on the pod, but her folks that know, I was at a bar, a situation got heated, I ended up getting in like a freak accident where my knee was shattered into four different pieces, and now I have like arthritis in my left knee. So drunk crowds especially, I'm still trying to decide whether or not I can fuck with that, because I don't think that's the type of anxiety that I want to dig my heels and like push through. I think that's like an airplane situation, Katie, where it's like, no, like I got the signal, my body's trying to tell me something, I'm fucking out.
yeah. And there's certain things, right? Like having anxious feelings, which I have read to call them your anxious feelings, not your anxiety, because it's not an object that you own. It's not your anxiety. These are anxious feelings you're experiencing. So identifying an anxious experience versus anxiety around a past trauma.
Yeah. And I think, again, not drinking really helps me identify those situations. Yeah. Like, I was anxious for Trixie and Katya, but I knew I was going to be there with safe people, and I knew that I was going to be able to, you know, figure out something that worked for me. I knew that I was going to have an NA beverage, even if that was a giant thing of orange juice, and that I had people that I could text and call, but I wouldn't have been able to identify between those two things when I was drinking. I would have just blacked it all out. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I would have puked on someone. I've puked on our friend Ashley randomly, like multiple times. I'm so sorry, Ashley.
You know me, I threw up often, mostly on myself.
Yeah.
So gross. The puke splash is like, that's some, I have anxiety around that trauma for sure. So I think that it's important that we communicate with you guys that what we're saying is that you're going to deal with uncomfortability in early sobriety and in sobriety in general. I mean, it's part of the beauty of what we're doing, right? Is like we're taking away the numbing agent so that we can dig in and understand why we feel certain ways when we feel them. And I know for Kaylee, Kaylee, you've said that tough love is something that you like to be, or are learning to like to be on the receiving end of it. And so that is really important in your process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think understanding that like everyone's relationship with addiction and mental health is not going to be the same. Like we all didn't start with the same deck of cards. So you may have high anxiety before you even started drinking.
Clinically, like diagnosed anxiety.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Like I'm on Lexapro and I call it Wellbutrin. So that's where I'm at, and definitely don't want to give any advice here that would listen to your doctor and don't change anything there. But I think one of the themes that's popping up to me that I actually had a talk through work, this woman, Christina Joy Whitaker, she's a business and leadership strategist and CEO of the Pivot Group. So shout out to her for coming to my work and talking about this and just like the perfect time. But she talked a lot about perfectionism and imposter syndrome and self-confidence versus self-esteem. But something that I felt really rung true here was like the idea of resiliency. So when do you kind of know when to like push through and tell yourself that you're okay versus when are you kind of experiencing that fight or flight and being like, nope, I I don't feel safe. I need to get the fuck out of here. And whether or not everything would have been fine does not matter because I need to protect myself in this moment. So I just keep thinking back to this thought because I've had it and I've been there. And basically, like, how do I convince people who stop drinking and they're in like month three and things fucking suck and they're feeling really anxious and they're like, well, what's the point? I might as well go back to drinking. So, resiliency is not a personality trait that only some people possess. So you are not like failing at not drinking by it being hard for you.
Right. It's hard for everyone not drinking, like every
exactly.
person.
Yes. In this society that we're in, and, you know, go back and listen to our episode on big alcohol if you want to hear our rant about that. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to, and you really realize it when you stop drinking, how much it is just everywhere all around you at all times. So like everyone is going through that who is practicing sobriety or abstinence from alcohol. But when you are faced with those problems, sobriety actually allows you to be able to bounce back and obtain mm-hmm. success and like level up and like thrive and grow and be effective in the face of like when you get those challenges or you get those things that give you a rash or that make you feel super anxious or like your heart's going to beat out of your chest or you feel like legitimate fear. Like you will be able to get through those things and be on the other side like so much better and more comfortably if you allow yourself to go through these moments and use them as a tool to like learn more about yourself and what you can do in the future.
Totally. And I want to add for anyone that's early on in their sobriety, Kaylee, and tell me if you, I feel like this is something I would recommend to people that are early on because I wasn't able to do this, but you should because you deserve it. If you're looking for instant gratification, literally take sobriety one day at a time because every single day that you stay away from alcohol, you get that instant gratification the next day of I did it, right? Like it is the best way to set yourself up for success and to reap the rewards the fastest, the most streamlined way you will ever reach results doing anything ever is by removing alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know one person I look up to or one person that like is an expander for me or that I, you know, aligns with the things that I like who are heavy drinkers. I don't think that a lot of the people that we idolize, you know, celebrities or mental health workers or like a lot of people that we really put up on pedestals, they aren't participating in alcohol because they know it's poison. They know it's bad for you. And I think that, yeah, if you're looking to level up, and we don't always have to be, but taking alcohol out of the equation makes it so much easier. I don't know, Kaylee, do you agree with that? Like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I do. I also feel like, oh, man, I had something really good.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go.
With that being said, it's difficult because all good things are difficult to do. And there's a learning curve and it'll take a few tries and that's okay. Like I am laughing when I'm saying that because I just did not know that or didn't believe that in the beginning. And now I see myself surrounded by so many amazing people who have had slip ups and have drank and then taken breaks and then gone back and then taken breaks. And I'm so inspired by them. And I just think that that part of sobriety is really special. Like you have a learning period. There's always a curve.
Oh, yeah. Like I myself have been there. I've had multiple slip ups and I'm still completely fucking blown away that I'm almost a year and a half without alcohol. Like I think without alcohol, I have done so many things that I honestly never believed were possible. And I just don't know how to say it in a way that doesn't come across cheesy like that. But mm-hmm. I never thought I would be making this much money, being this happy at work, having such strong connected friendships, advocating for myself.
Having Therapy Jeff on our podcast.
Having Therapy Jeff on our podcast. Yeah, having a podcast. This is our 21st episode. I'm just like, shit is way better than I ever imagined it could have been. And that's coming from mm-hmm. someone with like persistent depressive disorder, a history of self-harm, binge drinking. Like it just gets so much better. You know, that's why we're doing this, is even if we're not trying to like get everyone to completely become booze free and like join us in our cult, but also can we have one? And
yeah,
and do you want to join it?
I totally agree. Anyways, I think we can both agree that it's time that we start leaving people with, like, we want to call it homework.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, homework has a negative connotation. But
okay, well, let's come up with a different name for it.
Yeah, with a thought, with an action.
Yes.
With an intention for your evening.
The rest of your week.
Yeah, the rest of your week.
Yeah. So we talked about anxiety and alcohol today. And so this is something that really worked for me. I actually picked this up through a Reframe app, which I'm sure a lot of our suggestions will come from, not just Reframe app, but so many different organizations and people who are doing the work for us to share this message,
right.
There are people gathering data about this all over the world, and it's so important that people have exposure to it. So when you start to get that negative self-talk, when you start to feel those feelings of anxiety, whatever that looks like for you, whether it be, what I call bad butterflies in my stomach, a rash, you're sweating, you just feel like an overall disassociation with the environment that you're in, and you just want to go inward, stop. Make sure you're in a safe place. Feel the feeling. Try your best to identify what triggered it. And write it down. Take out your notes on your phone. You don't even have to have a pen and paper. Write it down. And do that just one time this week. And let us know if it helps you get through that moment when you're like, fuck, I want to drink again.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially as you are in the first part of whatever your sober journey looks like for you. Just being able to know, like, you are not crazy. Your mm-hmm. body's trying to tell you something. Mm-hmm. So,
yes.
What Katie said, like, I identify what's happening in your body, even just like what your body is feeling. Mm-hmm. And then you can also use the help of a therapist or meditation or, more journaling to figure out exactly like why those things are popping up for mm-hmm. you and what you can do to manage that.
But I think mostly we skip over just the stopping and identifying and taking note mm-hmm. because we just everything. Yeah, we just want everything to feel good all of the time because hard feelings are fucking hard. And so, yeah, I hope that a couple of you try it out. Let me know if it's something you already do. Let us know how or what we could do to make it more effective for people. I know that a year and 3 months into my sobriety, I need this reminder. I don't always do this still as a sober person. And so I think we can all use it.